And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this finally Friday, April 10th, 2026, 107 in the afternoon. Temperatures outside in the low to mid 40s across the area. Should make it up close to 50 today. Plenty of sunshine will continue to melt away this snowpack. There is warmer weather heading our way as we head into the upcoming weekend. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. Good Friday afternoon to you, Bridget.
Well, it should warm up out there, and we'd be glad to see this. I, for one, am really glad to see the sunshine today. It was time for that to happen.
Yeah, it was a little chilly start to the morning. We had quite a bit of frost out there this morning with temperatures in the 20s, but again, things warming up, and they look much better as we head into the weekend. As we finish out today, though, we'll top out, again, right around 50 degrees out there with sunny skies and light west winds, and tonight we'll have clear skies turn partly cloudy towards sunrise with lows in the mid-30s. And for Saturday, it's going to be kind of a blustery day. Winds out of the south will be increasing and about 15 to 30, a lot of clouds around. We might see sunshine to start off the day, but then clouds will rapidly increase. And we can't even rule out an isolated shower with highs only in the upper 40s tomorrow. But the pick day of the weekend is Sunday. We'll have highs close to 70. Now, we could see a scattered shower late in the day, but the majority of the day should be pretty decent. And then scattered showers Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week. All 3 days, we have at least a chance of showers. No all-day rain events. There's a couple, two, three storms, quick-moving storm systems that'll be affecting the northern plains, giving us some showers. So I know we don't really need the moisture, obviously, but unfortunately, it is in the cards, and I had a few people ask me, are we done with the snow? And I think we're going to get one more system coming through here. Nothing like the last one, but I do believe we're not quite done with the snow just yet. So I think planting is going to be a little delayed.
Listener question for you. Yes. I'm sorry I missed this. Phil sent it yesterday, but I missed it. I didn't get some of my messages right away. And he said, please let us know if we are going straight to hot after this wet cycle on the LRC, because if we do, as in the past years, we're going to be baking our wet soil.
That's a good question. Yeah, and that's one of the things that we'll be talking with Gary about on Thursday on the Jay Thomas Show right after Weather and Ag. We'll have Gary Lezak on joining us talking about what this spring and summer looks like. I talked to Gary this morning, and we were going over a few things, and it does look like we're going to warm up after this initial kind of roller coaster ride over the next couple of weeks, but I don't see us going directly into a hot pattern the way it looks right now. Now, will we warm up? Yes, we are going to finally warm up and get out of this roller coaster pattern, but it still does look like, according to the LRC, at least what I'm seeing is that we should have above normal temperatures through the summer months, spring and summer. So hot wise, we're not going to make that direct flip into hot weather. No, it doesn't appear that we will.
Was it 3 years ago in the end of May, we had a 100-degree swing in a 48-hour period?
Yeah.
Or less. So I think that's what we'd like to avoid. Mm-hmm. You have those soils that are saturated and wet, and especially with some of the heavy clay gumbos we have, they literally just bake up into hard rocks, and you really can't recover from that throughout the growing season. Yeah. It's pretty traumatic. Well, let's see what those look like as we watch throughout our summer season. So other things we're going to watch for today. All right. For all of you grain marketing enthusiasts, we're going to be joined in our next segment by Greg Hansen. He is with Hansen Agri Commodities every Friday at 1:20. We do Market Uncovered. And there's been a WASDE report this week. There's some other marketing questions on the minds of our listeners we're going to talk about with Greg. And then after that, we'll be joined by Alexandra Dunn. She is with CropLife America. They have what they call the Be Sure campaign. And we're going to want to ask questions and learn more about what that campaign has going on as well. Anytime that you want to ask questions of our guests, of Dean and I, you can reach us on the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. You know, if anybody remembers, this was a few weeks back. I can't even remember what our topic of conversation was, but we got to the point where we said, you know, it's too bad people don't call and check on Addison. Someone should just call the JLA Insurance phone line, ask Addison how his day is, how he's doing. That may have been right around the time that the fan explosion happened in the production room, and Addison was nearly maimed by flying plastic shrapnel.
I think
but he's
was.
Safe now.
I think it wasn't.
It might have been right around that.
That incident's still fresh in my mind. I actually had to get out my new fan and turn it on today because it is, again, unbearably warm in the control room today. But I am managing. Well,
thank you for struggling through all that you do. But I was asked over lunch today if there will be a Is Addison OK membership card for those who want to be part of the Is Addison OK membership club or member club. And maybe that we could come up with some benefits and so forth for people who just regularly keep tabs on Addison and how he's doing throughout our shows at Weathered Egg and Focus. We keep him hopping a lot of times with a lot of crazy business during this show.
I already got my first phone call.
Well, I can't wait to hear what listeners are asking and how concerned they might be about you. And if you don't want to just dial them up at the JLA Insurance phone line, you can drop an email to Dean Weather at Flag Family and get those in before next Thursday so you can find out what the weather is going to be like on the day that you need to know coming up for the summer. Because again, next Thursday is the spring weather outlook. And you can reach Dean Weather at flagfamily.com. For me, you can find me ag at flagfamily.com. Thanks to Superior Grain Equipment, they power our inboxes. And they not only do that, but they protect your farm's future with Superior Grain Storage, Drying, and Handling Solutions. You can find them at superiorbins.com. Well, whenever exciting things happen, we try to make sure they're on the Lighthouse Commodities live stream. That is over on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV. And you just never know the things we might be able to share in the live stream. So it's not just a listening experience here on Weather and Ag in Focus. You can watch the antics that we're up to as well. One of the things that I meant to get to today, didn't get a chance to. I guess that was my day that I was choosing violence because I was making threats about weather situations. I wanted to talk about the starter flock program for kids when it comes to a specific sheep breed. So when you're getting started in the livestock industry, it can be a real challenge. I know that there are more and more young folks who want to get in a hand on the cattle industry. In fact, I've talked to a couple of young women who are, they're starting out with 10 or 15 head. They're currently doing some fencing. They're trying to just get that foothold in the livestock industry that they wanted to participate in. But there's a starter flock program. It's with the U.S. Targhee Sheep Association, where kids can get started with that breed. This program awards their recipients with a starter flock of three ewes, so that's three females, with at least one of the ewe lambs being donated by members of the U.S. Targhee Sheep Association. So the idea is to help these kids get started, give them a bit of a leg up instead of having to put out such a cash outlay in order to begin what they want to see as a long-term enterprise. In 2023, there's a young woman from Marshall, Minnesota, got her starter flock going through this program, and she said it was probably one of the best things that really helped her learn more about the breeding of her sheep. She's continued to grow her flock and now has 15 breeding ewes this year. The program is targeting kids who are 10 to 15 years old. And, of course, you're going to need some family support to go along with it. Somebody's going to maybe help you fix fence, get a spot all lined up when it's time for lambing in the barn, when it comes to sheep shearing time and more. And there are mentors associated with the program, too, that can help answer questions and really get the kids started. So if you're curious, maybe your kids have talked about what could be my next step in figuring out my own enterprise within agriculture, maybe it would be the starter flock program when it comes to sheep. And if you're curious about it, the applications are online. And if you're curious how to find them, you can always just drop me that email, ag@flagfamily.com. Earlier this morning as well, I had an opportunity to talk to a gentleman who works in the livestock industry down in Aberdeen, South Dakota. For those who aren't aware, last week at the Hub City Auction Barn, there was a cow came into the sales ring. She was blind in one eye and probably because she was so unfamiliar with what was going on, got agitated. One of the ringmen in the ring was caught unaware. He thought he could be safe behind a gate as they were trying to move her through the ring. And unfortunately, he was not. She tossed him around quite a bit. And so I inquired earlier today, how's that guy doing? He went to the hospital with multiple fractures and a lot of injury. And it sounds like he's recovering at home now after having some pretty extensive reconstructive surgery. There may be more issues at hand. So keep that in mind. You know, we always say don't turn your back on livestock. Be safe. And what I see is with programs like the Starter Flock program, what a great way for kids to get started with a smaller animal, teach them safety and care. And then as we, even as those animals mature and get older, we still want to make sure we keep an eye out and be safe, because even the most docile in our herd can have bad days too. There'll be so much more to talk about today. Got lots of great topics to cover as far as headlines in agriculture. But first, we're going to pick up the livestock report from the American Ag Network, and then we'll be joined by Greg Hansen with Hansen Agri-Commodities for Market Uncovered. It is time for Market Uncovered with Greg Hansen. Hansen Agri-Commodities joins us. Okay, Greg, already a whole lineup of questions for you from listeners, and let's start with this one before we even jump into what happened with this week's WASDE report. And this is from a farmer asking, what might your thoughts be with grain prices that seem to have separated from energy prices? What does that mean? Don't they usually follow each other through the market, but maybe not anymore?
Well, we definitely saw them follow the market the first, what, 2-3 weeks of March, other than one day where I think we did trade our own fundamental. But otherwise, corn with all the ethanol we produce is an energy. Soybeans with all the renewable diesel is an energy. So they're going to follow the energy markets to a point, but it does feel like in the last couple weeks, we've probably separated ourselves. I think a little bit of it is we're starting to get the spring. People are starting to think about what's the crop. We got an acre report here, 10 days ago. We're starting to trade our own fundamental a little bit. I still think if things just break loose in Iran again, you're probably looking at, the grains will follow along. But for the most part, we are trying to separate ourselves a little. Personal bias, I'm afraid the ceasefire is fragile, won't hold. Maybe it's the second, mm-hmm. third, fourth that does. And so my fear is if crude takes off on another run, it's going to have to influence the soybean market somewhat. But, we have other things to talk about. We got rainfalls and planting progresses and so on. It won't probably trade as close as it had, but it's still going to be somewhat tied to those energies.
That helps explain quite a bit, and I appreciate you being able to do that, Greg. I think there's more than one person with that question. Now, let's go to the report. What did you see come out this week? What did you think was accurate, et cetera?
Pretty boring report as a whole. They really did not touch the corn balance sheet at all. On the bean balance sheet, they did raise crush $35 million. They took it out of the export side, so it's a wash on the ending stocks. Minor changes on the wheat balance sheet. Global, really not a whole lot of change. Other than the wheat side, we did see a major increase in world wheat stocks, but it's all, we don't ever talk India as a whole, but we are looking at a drop in Indian consumption based on the number of stocks that they have of wheat. And there's also some chatter about maybe they're going to plant a little more corn. But as a whole, it was pretty much a boring report. We looked at it, we yawned, we went back to whatever else we were trading within a couple minutes.
When you bring that up about wheat in India, India is very much a farm protectionist country. They want to make sure that they use what's within country as much as possible before they would start looking at an import market, et cetera. So, and I didn't get a chance to read this report very closely, so thank you. I rely on you for this. For India, increasing their stock, so their inventory of wheat, does that give us less of a chance for us to try to sell some wheat over there this coming year? Will it really affect us tremendously in this marketplace?
They're very protectionist. And India is one of these countries where you and me might say, hey, that glass is 3/4 full, and they're going to go, hey, that glass is 1/4 empty. They do not want to run out. They're kind of like the Chinese in that way. They are going to make sure that there's absolutely no way they run out. And they're going to definitely be protectionist and make sure that the bulk of the gets done inside their own country with their own farmers. If they are consuming less and they have more wheat on hand, of course, that's just less wheat they will potentially buy from anybody. Now, whether it's mm-hmm. us or whether it's somebody else, with the change in all these trading agreements around the world, everything's in flux. I mean, people that we've traded with in the past, we may not trade with going forward, and vice versa. So we don't know who's going to get that business. When it comes to wheat, we are typically the supplier of last resort, mainly due to the fact that we are so far away logistically from the major buyers that we're, transportation eats up, you know, all of our advantages. I mean, we can produce a good crop cheaply, but there's a lot of freight to get it to where the main buyers are at. So, I mean, typically we're not going to do a whole lot with India anyway. Any business you can do with India is good business.
Oh, that's solid. Their money is good. There's no doubt. Now, I heard you mention China, and I read an article earlier this week talking about China's doing everything they can to move away from their dependence on U.S. soybeans for their hog market. So that, to me, that brought up the question of where are we at in this whole situation for China was supposed to buy X amount of soybeans from us, et cetera, et cetera. And with that type of news, will that continue to lower what they're, what they've agreed to buy, which I'm sure it will, but what do we think some of those impacts might be here over the next, let's say, growing season?
Well, I guess, I mean, for me, big picture, and I was just looking at some baseline projections from the USA that they put out in February going out 10 years. They are under the assumption that China will continue to buy more and more and more as they go forward. I have the bias that their population growth has peaked, that they are actually going backwards in growth. And as their population gets smaller, they will buy less. So that's a little different than the long-term model from the USDA. Since the first Trump administration, they've been trying to eliminate us as a supplier, and everybody knows that. Going forward, though, they did make that agreement to buy those beans. They have, looks like they have lived up to that agreement. The question is could they do more? We're not price competitive today. But if we're price competitive, yeah, they could always do more. But unfortunately, politics gets in the way with what's going on in the world a lot of the time. I do think that the meeting that Trump was supposed to have going over to China did get postponed because of what happened with Iran. The rumbling we hear is the Chinese do want to have that meeting. They want to sit down. They want to buy more of our commodities. Now, is it just beans? Could it be some corn? Could it be some wheat? Could it be, you know, this or that? That's what I'd like to know. I'd like that meeting to happen. It's going to happen. It just got postponed. But the long, you know, since it got postponed, what, 4 or 6 weeks? That's 4 to 6 weeks we lost out on maybe getting some business done that could actually get in there ahead of harvest time. So, you know, could they have done a lot more? We'll see. But I mean, I am optimistic. Usually, when we hear that we're going to meet with the Chinese, I'm usually pretty pessimistic about things. I'm optimistic they want to do something. And I think with what's changed in the world, with what we did with Venezuela, what we did with Iran, I think they realize Trump isn't bluffing. And they are going to have to look at dealing with us a little differently than what they had been doing in the previous 6 years.
And I think you're right. The sooner we would have an answer and could move some old crop out of the way prior to harvest, clean out some bin space, et cetera, would be wonderful. Last question I have for you, Greg, and this also came from a listener who said, do you think that younger farmers are better at marketing, forward contracting, et cetera, than some of their previous generations, or has it not changed as much?
It's a little both. It's not so much – some of it – I mean, when you talk age, it's experience versus not. But it's also, I think, personality. I think younger people are willing to look at some different things that – older farmers are a little bit stuck in their ways. So I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong. Some of it comes down to personality type is what I have found, you know, just working with farmers for 30 some years. But as a whole, I think younger farmers are willing to look at doing something different than what dad or grandpa did because they had that habit entrenched in how they market. I know some guys that are older that are very savvy marketers. And I know some guys that are older that struggle with being able to make a sale because they just have a hard time with it. You can see that with young guys too. So I
absolutely
yes,
it could be either way. So, Greg, you've done a marvelous job of answering so many questions today. Where can folks go to find you when they have additional ones during the week?
The easiest way is just grab your phone and dial 507-338-6433. You can always check us out on our Facebook page, Hanson Agri Commodities, or look us up at hanson-ag.com.
Thank you so much, Greg. I look forward to visiting with you next Friday for Market Uncovered with Hanson Agri Commodities. Folks, next we are going to visit with Alexandra Dunn. She's with CropLife America about their Be Sure campaign. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, and we are joined by Alexandra Dunn. She is with CropLife America because CropLife America has something going on called the Be Sure campaign. Now, just before we get to that, Alexandra, I think it would be helpful for you to explain to folks, what's CropLife America? Because I think it's important we start there.
Well, thank you for letting me be a guest with you today. It's delightful. And CropLife America is the national trade association in the U.S. for pesticide companies. So we work in Washington, D.C., and we advocate for responsible use of pesticides, also for timely registration of pesticide products for growers so that our American growers can have access to as many tools in their toolbox to fight weeds, pests, and disease. So we work with the Congress, the House and the Senate, with the EPA and the USDA and all the federal agencies. And then we also have staff out in the state legislatures. So we work on state policy that could impact farmers' access to tools like herbicides, insecticides, and so forth. And that's why we have the Be Sure campaign.
And Alexandra, tell us what this Be Sure campaign is all about, please.
Oh, I'm really excited to share with you. So the Be Sure campaign is a public campaign that promotes stewardship of the use of particular pesticides so that we protect our pollinators. And as that tends to focus on the use of neonicotinoid products, but really messages around the stewardship of pesticide use are relevant to growers using any pesticide. So, you know, really the mission of Be Sure is to help growers and their applicators to have access to some practical resources to ensure that, you know, crops go from seed to harvest as responsibly as possible. And, you know, we're a very strong advocate at CropLife America around proper label use. Certainly on farms, following the label is the most important requirement, really, when handling any pesticide.
Well, the labels matter, right? The label's the law. It tells us that, right, in FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide, Rodenticide, Fungicide, some other icides, acts. I know
yes,
they're all part of it.
You got it.
Okay.
Hey, it doesn't roll off the tongue, but it's important.
It's important. And I think that's probably, you know, the first biggest step is, especially just for the general public, when they're thinking, wow, you know, the word pesticide sounds so frightening. But we really are under very stringent rules about how things can be used and what can be done. And it's important to start with following those and why it's so important to proper stewardship, right? Because if we have improper stewardship, that leads to a host of problems that you probably know far more about, Alexandra.
Well, absolutely, Bridget. And, you know, one of the issues is that most people today are not farmers. They don't come from farming families. Or if they did, it's a little bit in their, you know, rearview mirror. It's a couple of generations ago. And so, you know, what they might hear about pesticide use or what they might imagine is something from a long time ago. And so growers today have such an incredible opportunity to share with the public, you know, that they are the primary stewards of the land and their livelihoods depend on preserving the natural resources for the next generation. Every grower that I have had the privilege of spending time with and meeting wants to not only pass that land on to their family, but work that land for many years to come. And so for that reason, the Be Sure campaign just puts together generations of agricultural knowledge with cutting edge science, innovation, and stewardship practices. And when you put all that together, the growers are, again, the top stewards of the land, and they can really steward how they apply those chemistries, how the people they work with are handling them, and all that responsible use is going to help raise the confidence of people who aren't familiar with farming in their food and help them actually realize that a lot of what they hear on social media and what they might read in the newspaper is actually misinformation about pesticide use and how food is grown.
It's fear-mongering. I'm just going to call it what it is. It is fear-mongering.
Yeah.
So you've explained, you know, why, you know, why this is so important as far as the industry is concerned. But who is part of the Be Sure campaign? Can you explain that?
Yes. So the Be Sure campaign is funded by a consortium of major companies that manufacture pesticide products. So we have Syngenta, BASF, Valent, Mitsui Chemicals, and Crop and Life Solutions, Bayer, Gowan, and PBI Gordon. Those companies happen to be members of Crop Life America. So we're a trade association. We are essentially, they all belong to us, like they pay dues to our organization. And we are helpers to amplify the Be Sure campaign that they have created. Also helping to amplify the Be Sure messages are the American Seed Trade Association. So many of the seed companies would belong to ASTA. Also the Ag Retailers Association. We share our office space with the ag retailer, so we're like roommates. And then also the Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association, very important for those non-row crops, the specialty crops around fruits and vegetables. So we're all really proud to amplify this whole campaign. Together, those companies call themselves Growing Matters, and the Growing Matters companies are really passionate about creating tools for farmers and growers and their applicators to protect pollinators, wildlife, and the American farmland.
And Alexandra, can you tell us a little bit about what's called treated seed point?
Sure. So treated.
Yeah, being careful with it. You bet.
Yeah, oh, well, absolutely. So, you know, I'm really glad you brought up treated seed because, you know, again, there are really good stewardship practices for treated seed. As we know, with technology evolving, those seeds come with pesticides coating on them so that at the most vulnerable time of the plant's lifespan, it's protected from fungus, from insects in the soil, and other threats. So Crop Life America has worked with ASTA, the Seed Trade Association, and we have a seed treatment stewardship guide. And it provides similar guidance to the Be Sure campaign about what to do when you have extra seed, how would you dispose of it, how can you return it to the right place. We're very proud of those resources. The guide includes how to handle a spill of treated seed, how you should clean it up, how anyone applying or using or handling treated seed should wear proper protective equipment, how to handle dust off or any type of off-target implications, and again, how to keep treated seed out of the food and feed supply. So some of you probably know that treated seed is brightly colored. I learned fun fact that you can pick any color. I thought there were rules around the color, but you know, if you're a creative person, I guess you can pick turquoise or hot pink. But regardless, the color of the treated seed means nothing. It's actually designed so that it stands out and wouldn't end up in feed supply or the food supply. I mean, if someone saw a hot pink kernel in their popcorn, they might think something was up. So, and I'm sure any cattle would similarly look askew at hot pink in their feed.
Well, for then that's what it's really designed for is, right, if you have, let's say you've got leftover treated soybean seed, you don't just automatically feed that in a ration to cattle because it is treated with an active ingredient. You also don't just go deliver the elevator and dump it in the pit so that it can be blended off with the rest of the crop. So you're exactly right. The color helps stand out to remind us that it is treated so that it doesn't go into an improper source where it doesn't belong. So those rules that you mentioned earlier, pretty important. Now I'm probably going to take this slightly off the road and down the ditch, but a question I think you can handle for me, Alexandra. You talked about Crop Life America doing a great job of working with governmental agencies to get new product registrations advanced. Do you think that that's going, are we going faster or slower than we were 5 years ago? You know, as we came out of the pandemic, all government agency work had slowed way down, just nosedive.
Yeah.
Do we think that things are back on track? Because we've heard commitments from EPA that they were going to get us back on track. Where do you think it stands?
I'm going to tell you that the forecast right now is a bit gloomy. Things are very slow. There really is a slowdown at EPA. It's due to a variety of factors. Not enough people at the workforce, complex scientific issues, but also really a movement of that fear that you mentioned is affecting how the EPA, when it is ready to approve a pesticide, especially a new pesticide that is really important for American growers to stay competitive with their growers in Brazil or Argentina. We want the American, say, soybean grower to be getting to market just as fast and fighting every weed, pest, and disease that their colleagues or, you know, competitors, frankly, in other countries have access to. And the companies I mentioned, they will register products in multiple countries. So we want American growers to have access to these same tools that a grower in another nation would have. Right now, that's not the case at all times. EPA needs to communicate out to the public why they are approving these pesticides and how they are properly used. And that communication message is running up against another important development that you may have heard about, the Make America Healthy movement. Those two things, actually, they shouldn't be at odds. Every farmer grows food to make America healthy. Everything about the American food system is to make America healthy. It's protein, it's vegetables, it's feed for our animals who become our protein. It is everything that we need. So they're really not in conflict, but there is a sense of some members of that movement that they want everything to be sort of chemical free. And so that's slowed things down just a bit more at EPA as EPA kind of struggles with trying to thread that needle and explain things to the Make America Healthy constituency.
I really appreciate you being able to answer that question. It was a little off the cuff, but thank you for doing that today, Alexandra.
We'll get there.
When questions pop up, we got to ask. So
I'm glad you asked.
Well, thank you. And when listeners want to ask you questions, where should they go to get more information about the Be Sure campaign or working with Crop Life America?
Well, certainly the Be Sure campaign, you know, definitely take a look at those resources at www.growingmatters.org/Be Sure. So I hope that came across pretty cleanly. And then for Crop Life America, please visit us at croplifeamerica.org. Lots of resources. We also have a great campaign for your farmer listeners. And I know this is one of the oldest radio stations in farm country, so that's really neat. It's really important that farmers be heard on all these issues, because when a farmer talks, people listen. It's like that old commercial about investments. So please, farmers, go to farmervoicesmatter.org. And there's a template there for you to send a message to the EPA about how responsible you are. And we'd love to see you take advantage of that opportunity. FarmerVoicesMatter.org.
I wrote that down so I can share with listeners in case they missed it and they want to email me. I will gladly share that website with them. Alexandra, thanks for your time today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. When we come back, we'll have a recap of the weather on some warmer weather. Finally, it's going to feel like spring as we head into at least half of the weekend. And we'll kind of detail how much rain we're expecting as well. All of that. And Bridget's got a couple of ag topics as well when we come back.
If you're in the midst of a building project idea, but you haven't moved forward yet, talk to Ander Co. They want you to help, or they want to be able to help you out. They've got 20 years plus experience with business and farms all across the region, and they would make sure to help you build something that is strength to last on new steel, commercial, industrial, and more. Again, check with them, Ander Co. Enterprises, 701-277-7078. Okay, Dean, I've got a new Canadian startup that claims they can stop lightning.
Interesting. How?
Okay. So it's called Skyward Wildfire. I hear everybody Googling as we speak. They are a Vancouver-based startup. They claim they can prevent lightning-caused wildfires by modifying high-risk storm clouds before it throws ground strikes. So they believe, okay, hang on, got to change pages on my notes here. They believe that they can use AI-driven weather and lightning models with operational weather modification techniques. So it's software. Ingest the meteorological data and the historic ignition patterns. So think about drought areas, dry plant material, etc. And they want to be able to forecast where cloud to ground strikes are most likely to translate to new fires. So when that risk crosses the risk threshold, Skyward coordinates aircraft to treat specific storm cells. So in theory, they would drop less dangerous lightning over critical assets and wildland urban interfaces.
So with this aircraft, does it say would the aircraft be flying into the storm, or would the aircraft deposit whatever they're depositing before these storms actually develop?
Sounds like it's flying into the storm. So Ooh. Welcome to your local no. version of the 4th of July, I guess, or whatever that movie was where they had to Independence Day, when they had to fly into the meteorite.
Yeah.
But yes.
Well, hopefully they would do that with drones instead of, man.
Piloted machines.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting, though.
I don't have a pilot's license, so I'm not signing up for either one.
No.
But they're saying it would be an aircraft release with fine aluminum-coated glass fibers that go into the targeted storm clouds and alter the electrical environment and then encourage the discharge to dispense in ways that would reduce a cloud-to-ground strike. So there you go. And this is just a startup. This is not happening, but this is a consideration that this company thinks they could stop some of the violent lightning strikes that cause wildfires and so forth.
Well, that would save a lot of money, that's for sure. You know,
let's face it, all wow. the acres that burned up
right?
just in the Midwestern states in the last 2 months.
Man.
And when I say Midwest, I'm saying Nebraska all the way down mm-hmm. to Oklahoma.
Yeah. And speaking about wildfires and drought conditions, I was taking a look at our latest computer guidance, both AI and our traditional models. And from the 15th through the end of the month, I know this is not good news, Bridget. We're getting pretty strong indications of 1 to 2 inches of rainfall across much of the valley and especially eastward. Now, that's not a bad thing eastward into northern parts of Minnesota. They do need the precip. They have been dry, but we don't need it, obviously. But it looks like up and down the valley here, a good shot at about an additional 1 to 2 inches of rain between mid-month and the end of the month. So we're getting into that stormier part of the LRC cycle, and we're going to start that as we head into next week. This weekend, though, well, it's going to be split. Saturday, tomorrow, going to be a breezy, cloudy day, temps in the 40s, so kind of a raw day tomorrow. Good day to sit inside, maybe watch the Masters. And then Sunday, we'll see a little more sunshine mixed with clouds, and it's going to be much milder with highs in the upper 60s to near 70. And then we'll introduce a slight chance of an isolated shower on Sunday. But a better chance for rain comes in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. Generally scattered showers each and every day with temperatures in the 50s, warming to the 60s on Wednesday. Thursday, again, another chance for showers before enjoy this weekend, because next weekend looks much colder. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised to see a few snowflakes in the Northern Valley next weekend. So we're on that roller coaster ride. And like I said, we'll be talking more about the spring and summer outlook on Thursday, next Thursday on the Jay Thomas Show. We'll be talking with Gary Lezak, and we'll be going over what our spring and summer is going to look like this year. So that'll do it for today's Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.